John Huckenberry here. Welcome back to The Takeaway. Democrats get things going at their convention in Charlotte today. And question, what do conventions do for us here, really? I mean, think back through history. Speeches are great. Love speeches. But what do they tell us?
A party ready to build a new consensus with all those across the land who share a community of values embodied in these words: family, work, neighborhood, peace, and freedom.
I guess we might have understood how Ronald Reagan would deal with the Soviet Union if we had listened closely to how he ignored this dude blowing the horn during his speech.
We're using up prime time.
Then back in 2000, when Al Gore did that overlong kiss with Tipper, I thought, do we really need this?
I fear my words cannot match this moment.
What does this tell us about anything? What's it tell us about leadership? Sure didn't tell us much about their relationship, their Splitsville, and he never made it to the White House. But this guy did.
Tonight, let us resolve to build that bridge to the 21st century, to meet our challenges and protect our values.
Well, I guess we had some clues already in 1992 as to the kind of difficulties Bill Clinton might encounter in the White House. But in general, this wretched show business, baby-kissing, whole family on stage thing is what the convention is about. The things we used to love about the old conventions are gone. Here's stalwart Eugene McCarthy back in 1968 trying to fend off a challenge from Vice President Hubert Humphrey.
This was the Pied Piper leading the young people over the edge of the riverbank, we assume. And the word was that neither the Piper nor the children were ever heard from again.
Humphrey prevailed at the convention even though he ran in no primaries. All of the dramatic floor fights, the cliffhanger roll call votes, the procedural chess games, smoke-filled rooms filled with white men deciding everything, well, we didn't really love that. But the drama is gone at the conventions. So let's just lose them all together.
Oh, my gosh.
Yo, man! Game over, man! Game over!
That's right. Lose them. Jonathan Bernstein is a political science professor at the University of Texas, San Antonio, and the brains behind a plain blog about politics. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
So I say kill them, put a fork in them. They're done, right?
Well, I don't think so. The conventions actually, they don't, you're absolutely right that they don't do what they used to do. They do not choose the nominees. But they still have important and very, very useful functions. For example, they do probably more than any other particular event during the campaign in actually educating people about what their party stands for. You played a few cliches, and God knows we're going to hear a ton of empty rhetoric this week, but we're also going to hear from the Democrats that they support the Affordable Care Act, that they have all sorts of particular plans that they're going to put in place if they win, and we're going to hear that, and they're going to talk, they're going to brag about the things that they're proud of, that in their view were the successes of the first 4 years of this administration. And what that does is it informs partisans who don't pay a whole lot of attention to politics in between elections of exactly what it is they're for in the first place.
Now, that, of course, is the argument from Jeremy Bernstein, who's a political science professor at the University of Texas, San Antonio. That is an argument for the pageantry, right? The pageantry of these conventions, not the process piece. And I'm just wondering if, in the way that you're describing them, these conventions tell things to people they mostly already know or should know.
Well, I don't know what people should know, but the truth is that most Americans don't pay a whole lot of attention to politics outside of election season. And what conventions do is it sort of gives us a signal, hey, it's time to start paying attention. Oh, wait, look, politics is back on my TV again. It's been maybe in the background for the last few months. People who really care about this stuff deeply have been paying attention for months, if not constantly. But a lot of people really don't. And so once the speeches start, people do, oh, they don't watch, you know, C-SPAN coverage, but they'll watch for a few minutes on the network prime time. Democrats will tune into MSNBC. Republicans last week turned into Fox News. They'll see all of a sudden the candidates and their surrogates start showing up on the morning programs, on radio shows, and they start informing their partisans of what it is that the party is running on. And that's a pretty important function in a democracy.
Again, Jonathan Bernstein, that is a sell job in a sense. And
sure.
I'm wondering why in 1968 the whole opening the process or allowing the maybe it wasn't so transparent, but at least showcasing the process of selecting the nominee. Why was that so unsatisfying? Why did that eventually go down in flames?
Well, there's a whole long historical answer to that, but basically a reform commission was put in on the Democratic side after the 1968 convention. The losers in 1968 were very unhappy with the idea that after Bobby Kennedy and Gene McCarthy campaigned in primaries across the country, that Hubert Humphrey won the nomination without doing any of that. And there was a reform commission put in, and they essentially changed the nature of the convention. Instead of the delegates, as they had been since the conventions were invented in the 19th century, the delegates used to be ambassadors from representatives of their state parties. Now, since 1972, the delegates are actually chosen. They're mostly slated by, and they're representatives of, the candidates themselves. So, you know, Mitt Romney, in a lot of cases, got to choose who the delegates were who were going to support him if he won primaries.
All right, so let's go back then. Jonathan Bernstein is political science professor at the University of Texas. He's the brains behind A Plain Blog about politics. How did Hubert Humphrey become the nominee in 1968 if he ran in no primaries? Was it something that LBJ, as the president who wasn't running, engineered behind the scenes, or was it some sort of party boss kind of thing, or did Hubert Humphrey do it himself?
Well, it was a combination of all those things, that Johnson was influential with some state parties. What would happen was that candidates would form coalitions with state party leaders, basically. And in some states, the parties were very hierarchical, so there were bosses. In some states, there were different local parties that you had to deal with. And people didn't like that. People thought that, especially the losers in 1968, thought, no, the people should make decisions. Well, we had the new system. It turned out to be a series of primary elections and open caucuses, and voters now make that decision. Now, parties turn out to be very important in the new system also. So I don't know if we wanted to evaluate new system versus old system. But in terms of the conventions, the people who show up at the conventions, you're absolutely right that the delegates on TV essentially serve as extras. They're no longer making decisions anymore.
All right. So the convention as a pageant then really has to be a kind of, America's Got Talent, or, a reality show in a way, for people to pay attention. You couldn't run a 3-day infomercial in prime time and expect the same number of people to tune in, right?
Well, most of it, people don't tune in because most of it the broadcast networks don't show. The broadcast networks give them 1 hour, more or less, for 3 days. But what it does is it creates sort of the media all pays attention. All the reporters go to the convention city, and that means that the reporters are all writing about politics, and the nightly news leads with politics unless there's a hurricane. The morning shows, radio talk shows are all talking about the convention, and that, even though the delegates aren't really doing anything for it, it's an infomercial that really works.
All right, and so it works in the way that the narrative has sort of evolved away from this cliffhanger to a slightly more orchestrated, but I guess reasonable level of pageantry. It's a little like Queen Elizabeth and the Royals meets some sort of talent show. But what do the delegates do? Is there an argument for getting the delegates out of it altogether, or is there a way in which their presence can be upgraded to democratize the whole sense of what this convention is about?
Well, I don't think there's a democracy problem with it, because the democracy happens earlier. What the delegates do, they have a sort of a dual role once they get there. On the one hand, when the TV cameras are rolling, they're extras. They need to wave the signs at the right point, all that kind of stuff. But they also are getting a lot done. The delegates tend to be important people within their local parties. Not only are the delegates there, but there's candidates and party officials, party professionals, campaign professionals, and they're all networking and doing the kinds of things that any organization would do when they have their big national conference. And that's actually a pretty important thing for any organization to be able to do. If we didn't have the conventions, the parties would want to do that anyway.
But don't political parties need to be different from sales meetings of, say, a corporation? Isn't there a problem if American democracy looks more corporate than it does populist?
Well, they don't exactly look like, there are some functions that national organizations want to have that carry over to the two, so that, you know, people want to see each other face to face, and that's a useful thing to do. Now, they're also doing some real democratizing there, so that, for example, the parties have to draft their platforms, and each party has a committee that does that, and they get the platform done, and the platform does wind up having some influence over what the next president and the next Congress winds up doing. So there's some substance there, but a lot of what's going on is networking behind the scenes, and they network, I guess I'd say it's not quite corporate, because they network as political animals rather than as corporate animals, so it's a little different.
And it's the sort of interaction between the federal level and the state level and the local level, and that's where the delegates come in, and it's probably better not to have them under the Klieg lights if that process is going to work. All right, before we go then, maybe the best way, maybe the takeaway here, the best way of thinking about the conventions is that they put a period at the end of the primary process, imperfect though it may be, but they also showcase what the candidates look like when they're not being argued with, when there's no contrary position. And that contrasts with the debates that are going to be in October, where it's all about fighting for your position. So you have the conventions on one side where there's all agreement, and the debates coming up in October, which are the second ritual.
That's exactly right. And this, you know, it's a chance for each party to get their message out, and that's a worthwhile thing to do in a democracy.
All right, Jonathan Bernstein, political scientist, the brains behind a plain blog about politics from San Antonio, Texas. Joining us, do you have a preference, Charlotte over Tampa this year?
Well, my favorite part is when they do the roll call vote. I think that's a lot of fun when the delegate from South Dakota talks about the Corn Palace. So the Republicans did a great job with that. If the Democrats can match it, I'd be impressed.
All right. Jonathan Bernstein, thanks so much. Coming up, we're going to hear from a delegate experiencing this convention firsthand, maybe crafting what he or she is going to say when the roll call vote happens. We're going to talk with a Mississippi delegate who tells the story of what it's like to be a Democrat in one of America's most conservative states. What are you hoping to hear down there in Charlotte?
My name is Eliza Migdal from Brooklyn, New York. I would like the Democrats to really work on having more effective slogans, and I've got one to suggest, which is, the Republicans are selling us a fantasy.
We'll see if somebody picks that up down there in Charlotte. What should be on the Democrats' agenda at their convention? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Participate in this conversation. You think conventions are great as a pageant? Should they be more of a procedural meeting that actually endorses a candidate? Should the votes be cliffhangers? What do you think? And participate in our third-party convention taking place at thetakeaway.org. Stay with us.